Hi, welcome to Solo BG Podcast. My name is Derek, and this is episode number 91. And today, it's going to be a different one because we're going to talk about two games, one of them being a Kickstarter preview. So stay tuned for this episode for that matter. Also, we're going to talk about another game that I call these kind of games like on the radar game and very indie. But I played the game already, and I played a few times, and you know what? You will hear my impressions, and of course, as you can read on the title, the game, the indie game that I'm mentioning, it's Streets of Steel, the Kicking Asphalt one, because there's two, so I'm going to talk about the base game from Kicking Asphalt, the retail version, and also, this is a Kickstarter preview for Patria Libre, which is an upcoming Kickstarter by Malinche Games. Soon to be released, I believe, towards the end of this month, which is April. Today's date, as I'm recording, it's Monday, April the 12th, and I'm recording about 8 p.m., so you get the idea that hopefully this Kickstarter will be on air, I guess, or live, towards the end of this month. Anyway, I'm very happy that you're here with me on the other side of the speaker, episode number 91. We are getting so close to that episode number 100, and that makes me very happy. I know I've been saying the same on the last probably 10 episodes, but well, it is what it is, right? I'm so happy for it. And actually, well, if you want to support the show, in that way we can make it to that episode number 100 and even more, probably 100 more, hopefully. There's many ways that you can do it. Most of them are free. You can follow us in social media, SoloBG Podcast, Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. You know, that's one big, big way that you can support the show, giving us a like on Facebook and a following on Twitter or Instagram. It's always very welcome, and it always makes me very happy. In that way, we can reach to more people through social media. Another way that you can do it as well is subscribing if you're listening through iTunes, giving us a review on iTunes as well, preferably 5-star reviews. In that way, you know, iTunes has like a weird algorithm that once you submit those things, the show is able to reach to more listeners. So that's another big way and a free way that you can support the show. And lastly, you can get some cool games from kickstartedgames.com. That's kickstartedgames.com with the ED. And you get 15% off from your total purchase, putting the code SOLOBG. Altogether, SOLOBG, and you get 15% off from your total purchase. Free shipping on the United States when you spend $100 or more. So there you go. You can get yourself some cool games from Kickstarter Games. And at the same time, well, you are supporting the show. I'm not going to lie to you. You're supporting the show by doing that. So I'm ready. I'm ready to start. What about you? I'm pretty sure you are as well. Like I said, this is going to be one of those special episodes where we mix two games and we talk about them. And I tell you, you know, what I think of them. Also, once again, Street of Steels, Kicking Asphalt, and Patria Libre, which is an upcoming Kickstarter by Malinche Games, and Saul Sanchez. So with that being said, let's start like the 91 episodes, well, including this one, the 90 episodes before this one. Like always, in 3, 2, 1.
Welcome to Solo BG, your podcast for solo and cooperative board games. Here you will find everything you need to know about your favorite and most recent games. Art, rules, gameplays, and interviews. Here is your host, Derek Rodriguez.
Alrighty, so we are officially in episode number 91. And, you know, I've been playing a few games since last time you and I, we talked through the speaker, and not that many, unfortunately. I've been busy with life, you know, I'm doing right now a master's degree, and work also keeps me busy, but I've been trying to, you know, play as much as I can. And actually, I didn't play too many different games, but I play them quite a bit and a few times, and that should give you a hint that some of them, I actually enjoy them a lot. And one of them, it's of course Streets of Steel Kicking Asphalt, which is the one that we're going to talk about tonight, or this evening, or this morning, so I won't say that much of it yet, but all I can share is that I've been playing it a lot, and I will tell you my impressions, of course. Also, I play another game that some of my friends were very excited about it, and I was curious too, but I ended up bringing it to the table. Well, I don't own a copy, but somebody else brought it to the table, and I have mixed feelings about it. It seems like it's been getting amazing feedback from all the, you know, from all the fans, hobby industry, whatever you want to call it. But yeah, it's a game that I have mixed feelings. And I'm talking about Whistle Mountain. This game, I don't remember the publisher right now, but Whistle Mountain, basically, it's a full Euro game with some hand management, worker placement, of course, some sort of area control as well. It's an interesting game, which fantastic production, I have to say. The production is fantastic. You get your tableau, and then it has like little six slots where you're going to put some, I guess, abilities that you can use during the game. But those ones kind of fit like a puzzle-y part, kind of. So it looks pretty cool. And also the meeples that you use, I guess, to go to different places and use the actions are very nice. One is like just like a big balloon, right? And the other ones are like a little, I don't know, it's in language barrier here, but like a little, you know, airship, I guess. And then you have a bigger one at the same time that you can go and place it and try to build machines. And that way you can use them. You can place yourself also in certain areas where if you're adjacent to other areas, well, you will get the rewards from them, or you will be able to active, devices that they were already placed on the board. There's also some places that you can go and get some cards, and those cards will give you different abilities during the game. And at the end, you're trying to reach out victory points. Now, the production is very cool because it's some sort of like, as you can probably guess, it's in a mountain, right? So you start at the bottom of the mountain, and there's some water. You're building kind of like platforms, kind of, you know, that's, I guess, the theme of the game. You're building platforms, and once you reach a certain level, it will trigger the end of the game. But as you're building different platform rows, water keeps increasing and increasing and increasing and increasing, and meeples that you save previously on previous turns, and you put them on those platforms, well, now they're going to start to drown, of course, because the water is reaching out to them. So it has some very interesting mechanics. It will be a lie from me to give you an impression right now because, once again, I only played it once, and I really scored very low. I mean, it was something like my two friends, they scored like 170, 180, and I scored like 70, just to give you an idea. So my experience wasn't as fun as I wish. But at the same time, this game has received a lot of amazing feedback from a lot of gamers out there. So because of that, I really want to give it another try and see how I feel now that I know pretty much the whole rules of the game and I get the gimmick of the game and how it works. So, you know, probably my impressions can change, and I'm pretty certain that if they change, they will change more towards a positive feedback of the game. Like right now, if you ask me with my first experience, I would probably give it a 3 out of 5, but it's not fair since I only played it once, right? So anyway, I just wanted to share with you that I played that game and that I'm looking forward to try it another time just to see how it goes and see if I can do better. Another game that you cannot play solo and that I played, I actually had a fantastic time with this edition. It's Mysterium Park. But Mysterium Park is I think it's one of the amusement park thing or like a circus park or something. I think this one is called Mysterium Park, better said. And the other one is just called Mysterium. I played Mysterium before, you know, the main board game, the main base game, I guess, the core set, if you want to call it, where basically one is that a psychic trying to, you know, or that medium trying to communicate with everybody else, all the other investigators. And it was fun, but at the same time, it didn't, you know, wake up anything on me. And I was like, yeah, whatever, other board game, that's fine. But then I tried Mysterium Park. It's so fast, so easy, so accessible, and so fun at the same time that I actually enjoy it, like, quite a bit. I'm really thinking on getting a copy for myself because, once again, I played this game in another friend's house. And this is, I think, one of those games that literally, you don't need any language. There's no language, just to start with. Like, there's no language. Like, anybody can play it in any language, and that's fantastic. Because I will share with you in my situation, personal situation, being bilingual, sometimes I have friends or family that they don't relate very well with games that they have a lot of, you know, language, especially in English, like cards that will activate or abilities or things like that. So when I play these games that they don't require any language, and basically you can play it anywhere in the world because it's just pictures, I love them, and especially when they work pretty well. Which, by the way, if you're listening to something in the background, it's my dogs that are just playing around the room. But, you know, this is a game that basically you're just going by clues, by pictures, and trying to do your best. And that's basically it. Once again, one is going to have the role of the medium, and other players will be the psychic people that will try to investigate. You're trying to find, of course, your identity first, like who you were. And then at the end, you were going to try to find the killer and the location, or the murderer on the location. And it's great. I mean, of course, this is a game that I guess the downside could be that you have to find the right group of people to play. Because I think this game can be so much enjoyable, like very, very, very enjoyable, as long as the theme and the atmosphere is there. Like, let's say you're getting close to Halloween times, and let's say that you're having a dinner with friends, and then everybody's like, hey, you know what, let's turn on the light, let's dim the lights a little bit, and, you know, probably put some candles if you like, just to set up the mood, and get a couple of drinks, and then, you know, whoever is going to be the clue giver, I guess, or the medium can start to, you know, throw the atmosphere there. If you want, throw a little bit of narrative, you know, make kind of give your dungeon master aspect, I guess, and bring it to the atmosphere. And then if you do that, I believe that if you have these aspects, and then why not do the Derek style and have a soundtrack playing on the background? If you do all these things, I think this game will be so much rich and enjoyable, and everybody will have a very nice experience. Versus if you play the game just without any atmosphere, almost no theme, no dungeon master aspect, and you just bring it to the table, it will still be fun. Don't get me wrong, it will still be fun. But I think it can be way, 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 funnier if you set up all those aspects that surround the game. And I think the game can shine and be a great game, like I guess it's supposed to be. But that was Mysterium Park, and it's weird that, you know, such a small games, and of course that they cannot be played solo, that I actually ended up loving them. But it happens. It happens. And I'm thinking seriously and truly to get a copy for myself and get a group of friends that I already have in mind and basically set up the mood. And believe me, when I do it, I will post a picture of how my gaming room looks, and, you know, with the dim lights and probably some candles and drinks and stuff. And I will share some pictures with you on our social media, of course, Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter, SoloBG Podcast. So there you go. That's my commitment with you. What else I have been playing? I play, I played this game, the Indiana Jones worker placement game. You know that I'm talking about. You know which game I'm talking about. It's a game that has been creating a lot of fuss lately. It's on the hottest list on BGG. Everybody's talking about it. Solo board gamers are talking about it all the time, especially my good friend Martin Gonzalez on the solo board gaming groups is talking about this game a lot, which, by the way, you can also listen to him in Solosaurus, which is a podcast that I highly recommend for solo gamers. This game, he fell in love with this game. Then I started to hear fuss everywhere and good reviews from the game. Then I went to my gaming store last weekend and I got a copy of it, and I've been playing it. And literally, is the Indiana Jones worker placement game that is probably one of my favorite Euros so far. I will tell you that, because the art, the production, everything is fantastic. And oh man, I really appreciate when a Euro game brings good art. You know, you will hear in some interviews that are upcoming in the podcast on these special episodes as we reach episode 100. There's some interviews over there where I talk to designers and publishers, and I talk about Euro games and how, you know, the art is not very appealing to me most of the times. But this one, the art, the components, the production, Everything is fantastic. And if you like the theme of, once again, Indiana Jones, ruins and exploring and, you know, adventures and monsters and guardians and temples, well, this is a game for you. And I'm talking about The Lost Ruins of Arnak by Min and Elvin, and it's published by CGE or Sedge Games Edition. It's a unique game. I will spoil you that already. I'm not going to tell you anything else regarding my impressions, just because you know, and this is a big hint, that when I really enjoy a game, when I really do, most likely it will have an episode on the podcast. So with that being said, Lost Ruins of Arnak will have an episode of the on the podcast. I will tell you right now, everything, the quality of the productions, once again, the art, components, mechanics, it's just unique. It's very unique. I'm not going to lie. There's some Euro games that I really enjoy, and they have great solo modes. For example, one of my favorites is Scythe. I love the art from Scythe. I love the production from Scythe, and I love how it plays solo. Raiders of the North Sea, another fantastic game that I like the art and production that I actually enjoy solo a lot. Another game that I love the theme is the main thing that attracts me, and also the components as well, the production. I love when Euro games really evolve and they start to be like, okay, let's give the players a great solo mode, but at the same time, fantastic art and fantastic productions, because then you have games that are very good, like Assassin's Creed Burgundy, with an awful, awful, art. I'm talking about the first edition. But the other game that I was mentioning is Black Angel. That's another one that I super duper love, you know, playing it solo, playing it in multiplayer. It's fantastic. Well, Lost Ruins of Arnak, it ties those games for me. And spoiler alert, it might be probably, you know, that unique Euro game for me, and I'm certain that it will reach those top lists towards the end of the year. So I don't want to spoil you anymore. Believe me, I want at the same time, I want to talk about Lost Ruins of Arnak, but I cannot do it right now because I really want to give the game the episode that it deserves. With that being said, let's jump into today's episode, because once again, we need to talk about two games. We're not going to go by sections of boxing, cover, and all that stuff, just because it's simpler to, you know, just talk about the game in general and then go from there. And, you know, I will do some section dividing, I guess, between one game and the other one. So with that being said, let's start with the upcoming Kickstarter. Once again, it's going to be live towards the end of April. Hopefully, that's what I was told by Saul Sanchez, which is actually the designer, and he is the CEO from the company, from the publisher Malinche Games, which is originally from Mexico, and this game, it's called Patria Libre. Once again, the game that I received, it's a prototype copy that actually you can check on our social media. I put some pictures over there, and that way you can see the components. What is this game about? I mean, what is Patria Libre, you probably are wondering. Well, it's based on the war from North America between the time of 1810 and 1821. And basically, Patria Libre, it happens in 1821. It's a game that reenacts the historic events occurring in Mexico or New Spain between 1810 and 1821. It is played with two sides of the insurgents, which sought to separate from Spain, and the royalists who tried to prevent it. It is a game for 2 to 4 players, which it will have a solo mode. I didn't try the solo mode at all because the rules are not developed yet, but I tried the multiplayer a few times, so I will tell you all about it. And you're going to use the orders to enable that will enable you to recruit, move, attack, level up units, collect taxes, build a stronghold, or buy event or character cards. And your objective is to gain more victory points than the other side. To achieve this, you must control key regions and use cards who match with your faction. And of course, there's many components that are going to be key for you to achieve these goals. Now, what you're going to receive on your Kickstarter, or the idea of this prototype, is to show what you will receive on the base game on the Kickstarter. Well, you will get the game board, you will get the leader tokens, which, once again, they're based on the Mexican or New Spain history on that time. For example, Morelos, Hidalgo, Calleja, Venegas. You will also gonna get popularity markers. You're gonna get your strength tokens. You're gonna get coins, gold, which or they're called you know, pesos as well, which is the Mexican currency. You're gonna get them in gold and silver, and they will have different amounts. Like the gold will equivalent to 3 pesos, and the silver will equivalent to 1 peso. You will get the victory point markers, the domain markers. You're also gonna get the leader cards. That from the characters that you will choose for the game, and you're gonna get the characters and event cards as well that they will be triggering during the game. You're also gonna get the artillery troops, infantry troops, cavalry troops, the popularity board, which has a pretty interesting mechanic, and the orders, which is 4 per faction. This is a thing that I like and I find unique from the game that I will tell you a little bit more in a little bit. And basically, you're going to be playing in the different variants that you can do. There's variants for two-player setup, or for two-player versions, I'm sorry, when you're going to be trying to meet certain criteria in order to win. There's also, other ways that you can play the game, which basically is free-for-all, which is whoever gets more victory points, wins the game. And there's different ways that the game can end, or that the end of the game can trigger. So basically in this game, once again, you're going to try to achieve and to have more control of certain areas. Of course, we're talking about the New Spain or Mexico area. And you're going to be doing by activating different factions. Now, there's going to be a deck of events that is going to be moving kind of like a clockwise every turn. So, for example, you will have 3 events on the top of the board where you're going to start with. And then, 4 events, I'm sorry. And then, once you finish a turn, the one on the left goes away. If it has an event that triggered at the time, it will trigger, and then another one comes up, and it will have 3 phases basically for those events. So it will be a deck with level 1, deck with level 2, deck with level 3, or a stage 1, 2, and 3. And once all those stages are gone, that's also an end of the game condition. And that's basically you're trying to get victory points. Now, the interesting mechanic here that makes it different, and it's not just a simple area control game where you're trying to place your meeples, is that you will have those 4 order tokens that you will use in order to give actions during your turn. So it has also an aspect of, action selection program, let's say, before your turn. So each token, it will be dual side. So one side, it will trigger one action. Let's say you're going to collect taxes on one side. And on the other side, it might say something like, well, I'm going to ring artillery. So on your turn, you're going to choose which token you're going to use, and you're going to place it depending on the side that you want to activate. Let's say you want to get some taxes, or collect some taxes, you're going to place it with that side face up. That particular token that on the other side has the reroll action. And that's it. You're going to resolve the turn. Then the other players will do the same, and then it will come to you. You have 3 remaining. So then, once again, all the 3 remaining will have 3 different actions on each side. So they're dual. You're going to do the same, and so on and so forth. And your turn, you can also choose to basically forfeit your turn and rest and get everything back. But the nice gimmick of this game, or the interesting gimmick of this game, is that if you pick up 1 token that you previously placed to resolve an action, you have to do now the other side. So basically, if you use 1 token to collect taxes, once you pick up that token and you want to play it again in the future turns, you cannot collect taxes anymore. You cannot use the side to collect taxes anymore. Now, you have to use the other side, which in this case, like we were putting as an example, it will bring the artillery. So with that being said, you have to be very cautious of which actions you use, and that also adds a lot of tension towards the timing of the game. And I think that mechanic is very interesting. Also, you can buy cards or characters from the events deck that they will be coming on. And those ones, I guess the idea is that you can attach them as well on those tokens, and you have improved abilities and improved turns, basically better actions that you can do every turn. So that's the whole idea of Patria Libre. It will have a scoring track, once again, of 30 victory points, which that, if you met certain conditions and if you have the most victory points, you win the game. For example, I will read you right now, victory conditions and end game. You know, after a turn is resolved, game ends if one of the following four conditions is met. One, have an advantage of 10 victory points or more over the other side. You know, so if you are playing with a team in a two-player game and at some point you have 10 victory points more than your opponent, well, guess what? You win the game. Or if after resolving your turn, a card size, one of the players control three different provinces with enemy flags wins the game. That thematically represents that you basically control the new Spain. So if you were in the side of those that you were supporting to Spain to control the Mexican territory and you're able to control three enemy flags, in this case, three Mexican flags, well, you will win the game. Or on the contrary, if you were from the side that you wanted to, you know, basically take the Spaniards away, well, if at some point you control three territories where there's a Spaniard's flags, well, you won't win the game. If the victory point ever reaches or surpasses 30 victory points, well, the game end will trigger. And when the last card is resolved as well from all these stages that I mentioned before, when the last card is resolved, also the game ends. And once again, whoever has more victory points win the game. Another interesting mechanic where you can gain victory points is by playing with the popularity track. So as you are advancing on the popularity track through different actions, you will get some benefits, but also you can go low on the popularity track if you do certain things. Some of the idea on the popularity track of side, I got the same feeling. This game has a lot to offer, I have to tell you that. This game is once again designed by Saúl Sánchez, which is the same designer from Tierra y Libertad, which was another Kickstarter that came out about 2 years ago. And I can definitely tell you, because they were very kind, and a few months ago they sent me the Tierra y Libertad, which was the antecessor, I guess, or predecessor from Patria Libre. I can tell you that Saúl has been growing as a designer already. I can tell you that there's more complexity in this game, and there's mechanics that they feel more smooth at the same time. There's some nice ideas here. There's some good implementation of the theme. Definitely, the game is very rich in theme and in history. He does his best at trying to translate, once again, the events that occur on that time in a board game, basically. This is not a war game, though. Even if it falls in that era and time period, this is not a war game. This is, I believe, an area control game with a nice action program mechanics. That's basically the two main mechanics of the game. Don't jump into Kickstarter with the idea, okay, another cool war game with a cool theme, you know, this theme is appealing for me, from those times in Mexico. No, this is not a war game. This is a completely board game. And I can definitely see the seal from Malinche Games aiming towards games that you can actually split on teams, which sometimes that can be tricky, though, because there's a lot of gamers that they're not appealing to those kind of games. And there's some other gamers that they have a group of, I don't know, four players, and those games can suit very well for those game nights, I guess, you know, where they can play two versus two. The free-for-all version is there. Of course, there's always the option for that. But I think the main idea of this game, particularly, it's either to play one versus one or two versus two, or even two versus one, I guess, if you wanna call it that way. Once again, the solo mode, I haven't tried it. I'm pretty sure it will be interesting. And if at some point I try it, if at some point they send me the rules and I keep this prototype, or they send me a production copy, if they are successful with the Kickstarter, believe me that I will mention it as well. I think this is a game that has very interesting mechanics, very unique and innovating mechanics, and an excellent theme, that it will have a solo mode that I will be looking forward to try. And with that being said, just stay tuned for this game. With the prototype components that I receive, I can tell you that, of course, it feels like a prototype. It feels homemade, to be honest with you. But the art that they're using, it's pretty cool. Actually, it's way better than the one from Tierra y Libertad. Tierra y Libertad, I actually liked it, but the art, I wasn't a huge fan of it. The components, they were nice, but I wasn't a huge fan of it either. Patria Libre, the art, I can definitely see that they improve in the art. It has a very cool cover on the box. Actually, once again, you can see them on the social media. I post some pictures there. And also, the components, I'm sure that they will look very, very good once the production comes, because I can see a very well-landed idea of design and a strong design on this game that I wouldn't understand if the components are not good quality. So just stay tuned for that. Stay tuned for that game because it's coming up very soon on Kickstarter. Once again, we are recording on the second week of April 2021, and I'm pretty sure this Kickstarter will be live on the end of April or beginning of May, according, once again, to the publisher that sent me this prototype for me to try it, and they gave me all that information. So with that being said, let's go really quick, for a message from our sponsor, and we will be back to talk about the second game of the episode. Are you looking for that Kickstarter game that you missed during the Kickstarter campaign? Are you looking for that awesome and mythic expansion for one of your favorite board games? Are you sad because you didn't got the Kickstarter version of that game? Or perhaps you are like me and like to get a game with Kickstarter exclusive components and stretch goals? Well, don't look any further and go right now to KickstarterGames.com. There, you will find Kickstarter board games, expansions, Kickstarter exclusive content, graphic novels, RPG novels, toys and collectibles, and much more. Kickstarter Games is my favorite site to go and get those amazing games that I want to have on my gaming collection. Plus, they offer free shipping in the US when you spend $99 or more. And if that wasn't enough, right now you can get a 15% off if you use the code SOLOBG. That's right. Use the code SOLOBG altogether and obtain 15% off from your total purchase. So go right now and check it out while you listen to this episode. Once again, www.kickstartergames.com, and enjoy all those amazing games. Okay, so we are here to talk about Streets of Steel, Kicking Asphalt. And this is the side-scrolling four-player co-op 80s retro future beat-em-up board game. A lot of love description here. It's published by Wild Power Games. I know the designer, and I'm sorry because I don't see the name yet, but I know the designer is the same guy that made Guitar Hero, the video game. That's right. It's the same designer from Guitar Hero. So can you believe it? Now we're getting an arcade game to a board game, Streets of Steel. Let me tell you this. I never was aware of the Kickstarter. Never, from this game, which I'm surprised because I really like the art of these type of games, the components, you know, the idea, all the stuff. I'm a huge, fan of pixel art, I guess. And I miss it. I didn't saw this game until somebody posted on social media. And then I did my research and I was like, oh, that game looks cool. Let me order a copy for myself. And I got a copy of myself from Kicking Asphalt, which I believe there's another core game which is called Rush and Scare or something like that. And you can mix them together and play with both of them and whatever. And the idea of this game, at least for what they're telling us, it's to literally go back in time and play a side-scrolling arcade game, but in our tables. The box of the game is not that big. It's actually kind of small, which is nice. Not very small, but, you know, decent size. And it has a cool cover that I love, which is basically like an old arcade. And you have the characters of the game, of this version at least. You have Average Joe, you have Candy, Kiki, Major Van Damme, and you have the mutant boss and some of the baddies there as well. And you have all the arcade buttons and everything and some coins. Actually, the things that you will use inside the game. And as we open the game, the components are good. Are good enough for the game. Now, there's a version that has minis, though. But this is one of those games that you don't want the minis. You want the standees. And believe me, I'm a huge fan of minis. But on this one, the standees work fantastic because, of course, you want to get that 8-bit or 16-bit, I guess, whatever you want to call, Super Nintendo, Sega Genesis, nostalgia, arcade art. So I think the standees do a great job. So basically, in a few words, Well, you want me to tell you about the components? I will tell you about the components. Why not? Let's see. I'm opening this big bad boy here, and I will tell you what it's including. It includes 8 street styles, which you're going to be playing them and making the board with them. 4 hero figures with the color bases. They're pretty... I will tell you my impressions in a little bit. 4 hero cards, 4 baddie cards, the item cards, behavior cards, boss card, event cards, the standee for the boss baddie and base, the 19 baddies figures, 1 player token with it, which is a arcade control, which I love. So I spoiled you with that already. 26 health tokens, 6 item tokens, 16 wild power tokens, quarter tokens, rough terrain tokens, and dice, of course. We all love dice. And if you're going to talk, I hate this term, but if you're going to talk about Ameritrash, you have to have dice and have a blast with them. You get punch dice, danger dice, and kick dice. That's what you're going to find inside the box. What are you going to do with all this? You probably are wondering. Well, you're going to start to have a blast and start to have an arcade adventure. So basically, you're going to lay out the street tiles. You're going to lay out 3, and the other ones are going to be forming a stack. And during the game, you're going to keep advancing through that stack, and it's going to give you, I guess, the idea of visualizing how you're going to be scrolling in an arcade game, but in this case on the table, and you're going to set up some baddies that they will have some predeterminated spaces on the board where they're going to start with. Then you're going to select your heroes depending on the number of players. If you're playing 1 player like I do, you're going to choose 3 heroes. If you're playing 2 players, well, 1 hero each. 3 players, 1 hero each. 4 players, well, you know, do the same. And basically you get your standee, you get your hero, you start with either if you want to play the wimpy version, it's with 5 coins. 5 quarters, if you want to put like a normal, 4 quarters, if you're going to play a hard, 3 quarters. Believe me, you want to play a wimpy version. So you get those 5 quarters, you populate the board, and you're good to go. You're also going to have an event deck that will trigger in everybody's turn. Also, well, it's called behavioral deck, better said, because you're going to have an event deck of 5 cards, and you're going to choose one randomly and mix it with those behavioral decks. For the baddies. You're also going to get a behavioral deck for the boss, but I will tell you more about it in a little bit. And that's it. You're ready to go. You start with your character on the leftmost side of the left street tile, and then you start to move, punch, killing those guys. Are you killing them? As you're killing them, I'm sorry, you're getting tokens, which with those tokens, once you reach a certain level, you can do combos, you can activate for abilities. And that's basically it. So every time that a player goes, they have 3 actions. Move, attack, do the special ability. And after their turn, you're going to reveal an event card or a behavioral card, better said, for the baddies. And it will do something. Some baddies will come into the board, or the same baddies that are on the board will attack you. Now, the interesting mechanic is that as every arcade game, as you remember, most of the movements were orthogonally. And if you move away from an area that has a baddie, that baddie will backstab you, basically. So that the theme is there. Believe me, the theme is there. So you're going to be playing like that. Then next player goes. 3 actions. You know, kill some baddies, get some tokens. Keep moving. Because remember, those tiles, streets, terrains, they're going to go. They're going to go away. After a player plays his 3 actions, then a behavioral deck and something else happens. Usually, or most of likely, bad things. Then the third player, in this case, if you're playing solo, if your third character, activates 3 actions, same thing happens. The interesting thing is that if, for example, if you're playing solo with 3 characters, after you have activated your third character, a street that it's all the way to your left, the street tile that is all the way to your left, it's going to disappear, and every character that is on it is going to die. So if one of your characters is in that tile, he's going to die, so you don't want to have your characters there. That's why sometimes it's good to sacrifice some backstabs and try to, you know, push your luck as you're rolling dice and keep moving forward. In that way, you can survive to that phase. Then you're going to pass the first player marker to the next character, and you go in clockwise order again. You're going to reveal another street tile. You're going to put it on the right, and you're going to populate it. And you're going to keep advancing as that until you reach the final street tile, where the boss is going to come out. And at that point, it's either kill or be killed. Now, the interesting thing here is that the behavioral deck that you played with before now goes away, torn away, and then you bring a new behavioral deck that corresponds to the boss, which, of course, is going to have more difficult and bad experience for your heroes. And at that point is, once again, kill or be killed. Because if, even if all your characters have died, but one is surviving and him or her is able to defeat the bad guy, the boss, well, you have won your adventure of the arcade board game. If is the if the other the opposite situation happens, well, you have lost your adventure of the arcade board game, I guess. Now, of course, as you're doing all these and are you punching some baddies and stuff and having fun, you will have also some tableaus for the bad guys, and they will tell you, you know, where they're gonna spawn, their backstab amount of dice or which type of dice they use, and as you kill them, how many tokens rewards you get. Also, if one of your characters die, you basically take it away from the board, flip that character tableau face down, and he will have like a grave, and he will say something like, at least he tried or whatever. Then when it's his turn again or her turn again, you use one of those quarters that you start the game with, you put it there, ideally, right, like an arcade machine, and you bring your character back to life, and you start on your leftmost space, and you start to kick somebody's butts, you know, with those fantastic dice, and then so on and so forth. The one game that you can, one way that you can lose the game, of course, as you can probably imagine, is that if you run out of quarters or money and everybody's dead, well, you lose the game. It's very thematic. It was like back on the good old days when we were all kids and we used to go to the arcade places and we wanted to play more, and we were playing, I don't know, Street Fighter, Mortal Kombat, Double Dragon, The Simpsons arcade, well, any arcade that you want, Metal Gear Solid, whatever. And you'd run out of quarters and you were like, I really want to play, I was so close. Well, same here. You run out of quarters, you lose the game. And that's basically it. Now, jumping to my impressions right now about this game. I guess it's easier because this is, of course, a final production of the game. Talking about my impressions, I have heard mixed comments about this game. Not so many comments off of this game. I guess the Kickstarter wasn't like that crazy successful, which is surprising because the theme is very cool and the art is very cool. I will spoil you that. But, you know, it's a very under-the-radar game. And there have been mixed comments, you know. I saw some comments today about complaining about replayability on the game, that it was very low, you know, that it's only on one box, it's only one boss, and then if you get the other box, well, it's another boss, and you can mix them and get some sort of replayability. But in my opinion, this game, yes, and let's start, I guess, with the review now from this game, my impressions. The replayability, it's low in a certain way. So here is the thing, and this happened to me recently. I purchased a mini SNES, and I was playing some games that I used to love as a kid. One of them, for example, it was Hook, you know, the Peter Pan Super Nintendo game. I used to love that game. I know you can be like, come on, Derek, that's a lame game, whatever. I used to love it. That one and the Power Rangers, they were some of my favorite video games for the Super Nintendo. I play those games right now, and probably it will take me, I don't know, 45 minutes? To finish them, like, completely. And then I started thinking, like, man, back on those days, and I'm pretty sure a lot of you relate with me, back of those days, we used to stay up all night playing this, probably the same game, over and over and over and over and over, or with our friends, you know, sleepovers and stuff, and we used to have a blast, of course, different times. But, you know, it was that way. Now, going back to another of my favorite games from the original Sega Genesis, Altered Beast, it was only like six or seven levels. Remember the voice from your grave. I mean, it was so fun. I used to have fantastic memories of this game. Once again, I played it recently. It went very fast, you know? I mean, it didn't took that long. So, going back to this board game, the idea of this game, they're not lying to you. They're telling you, hey, this game, it's about an arcade game. We're trying to bring that nostalgic feeling towards the board game, and that's it. And that's it. I mean, honestly, there's no more. I mean, you're going to be playing the same thing over and over, but in a good way, in my opinion, because it's just like that. It's just like a video game, but in a board game. Honestly, you can adjust the difficulty and stuff and you know, all the way that you can, and to add replayability to make it different. Yes, if you're talking about replayability on making different every time, Well, that you're right. There's no replayability. But as a fun or as the idea of being aware of what this game is about, I think the replayability will be there in the same matter as you playing the same video game over and over from the old school. So that's what I was trying to say. You know, I played this game already like 7 times. I only win 1 time in normal mode. So it's hard. And it's very lucky-based because sometimes you're rolling like great, just like most of the American Trash games. And sometimes you have bad rolls and that's it. I mean, there's no way that you can... There's some ways to mitigate the rolls, I guess. There's some tokens that you can use to reroll, the same that they help you for combos and stuff. But, I mean, it's only 1 token per 1 die. And you know, the dice can punish you. The dice can punish you a lot. So that's it. Now, components-wise, I like the components of the... Component-wise, I mean... Honestly, this is one of the, like I mentioned before, one of those weird games where I don't want minis at all. Like, I know on the Kickstarter there were minis, and there's actually a version that you can buy from their website that it includes minis. I will recommend you 100% go with the standees. The standees really give that art and that feeling of playing an arcade game, so just stick with the standees for this one. Believe me, I'm a huge mini fan. You know, I love to have 3,000 minis on my gaming room and have that fantasy of imagination that sometime in my life, probably once I get retired, I will paint all of them. Well, this, I don't want minis. I will hate to have minis for this game. That's why I recommend standees. The cards are very standard quality, nothing great. The dice, they're cool, but at the same time, they're not, you know, I mentioned before, fantastic, amazing dice, just because the excitement of the game, but the quality of the dice, I actually very... normal-ish, or on something probably a little bit low. The tokens, the cardboard is very sturdy. The first player marker is probably one of my favorite things. The character tableau and the street tiles are very sturdy as well. So the components, they have a purpose and they serve well on this game. And that's basically it. I mean, you don't get too much on the box other than the excitement of trying to revive those cool memories of where you were playing arcade games from the good old days. And that's basically it. If you ask me what score I give to this game going to zero, from 0 to 5, where 5 is the best game ever and 0 is the worst game ever, for me, Streets of Steel has a solid 3.5, taking in consideration everything that I mentioned. Once again, if you're looking at a game with an arcade theme, that it will give you a lot of replayability in the aspect of facing different bosses, different levels, different things, different stories. No, it's not going to happen unless you get the 2 base boxes and you can mix them. Once again, the other one is Russian Scare, which I honestly don't know what is in it. Probably some sort of ghouls or zombies or something, monsters. This is more like a, you know, baddies on the street than a mutant boss. So if you're looking for different stories and that stuff, this is probably not a game for you. If you're looking literally to translate an arcade game to the board game table, I think this game accomplished that very well. I think they literally brought to the table what they said on the box. The side-scrolling 4-player co-op 80s retro future beat-em-up board game. Because that's what it is. That's it. I mean, they're not lying. And it's sometimes even weird to hear that and to be able to understand it. But think about it. How many games out there, they promise you something with the box, with the theme, with a previews, and then by the time that you place them on the table, they can be good, they can be bad, but it's nothing close to what they promise. This one, they actually, what they're saying, hey, this is a game of this. That's the reality. That's what you're going to experience on the table. So I like the game, and it's just staying in my collection just because I don't mind to play the same thing over and over as long as it's good. It's like movies. I don't mind playing Back to the Future once a year, Interstellar, 2001 Space Odyssey, any of the Batman movies. I mean, well, except the George Clooney, but you know, watch them once a year. I mean, I don't mind them because I like them. I enjoy it. Same for this. If you're a sucker like me for this art, for the theme, then I think you will enjoy it. I think this is a game also can be very fun with kids. I think a game. This could be a game that, you know, you can sit with your kids and come on, let's kill that body, roll that die, and have those experiences of epicness and, you know, with hits and successes and the kids jumping around because they were able to kill the body. I can definitely see that enjoyment on this game. Also, I mean, grown-ups, I mean, I'm pretty sure, like I will tell you right now, I have some friends that they really get into epic roles, and I already, you know, have them in mind to show them Streets of Steel, and let's see how it goes. So there you go. Those are my feelings about the game and also about the previous game that I mentioned, Patria Libre, you know, the upcoming Kickstarter by Malinche Games and Saul Sanchez. With that being said, we are ready to kick in with the last 9 episodes of the show. And, you know, we're going to have interviews, we're going to have giveaways, you know, so stay tuned to that, please. This is the time to stay tuned because I'm trying to interview the celebrities on the hobby, which most of them have confirmed, and I'm adding even more. So please stay tuned for that because I'm pretty sure you will enjoy them a lot. And like always, thank you for your support. Thank you for staying tuned. Thank you for following. Thank you for subscribing. Thank you for everything from the bottom of my heart. This is Derek. And like always, remember,
for victory, go tell your friends.
Till next time, see you through the speaker and not the table.